Welcome to Humans of Metagame, a podcast about the tales and adventures of players, patrons, and guilders of metagame. So grab a cup of tea or ale and join us by the fire. Welcome, Sarah, to the Humans of Metagame podcast.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate being here.
Thank you for coming on. Glad to have you. And yeah, we haven't recorded a new episode of the Humans of Metagame in a while. So it was really about time.
Why is that? When was the what was the last one you did, actually?
I don't remember. I think the last time that we had a really kick-ass player join. That's kind of what got me to record previous ones. Like, because you don't just interview any player, but like, yeah, the players who really do well in metagame. And yeah, we have the three other series, the MetaView, the Frontiers of Coordination, and so like, yeah, I stay more focused on the main series.
Well, I'm flattered to be considered a key player. I've been doing this for like a year now, and it's been a wild ride. It's a very unique work environment.
Awesome. Well, yeah, you definitely are. So yeah, tell us a bit about yourself. Yeah, what's your origin story?
All right, so my origin story, I guess I'll start before the tech side. I dropped out of high school when I was like 17, 18. Never really did well in classical education. I always liked to learn by myself and kind of be my own leader. So I spent a few years kind of flailing around, trying different career paths. One of them that I did before tech in general was sales. I did pretty good in sales. I've sold a bunch of stuff like home appliances, clothes, online services, social media kind of growth. But I always felt like there was something a bit missing. I gravitated towards tech. I tried to learn coding maybe like 5-6 times before I was 18. First time I was maybe like 13, and I tried to learn C or C++, which are both like traditionally very difficult languages to get into. They're very low level and require a lot of understanding about how computers work. So that was a failure. I tried Python, I didn't like it, another failure. And I kind of just kept going back into HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. Eventually, COVID started, and I realized this is like probably my only opportunity for a long time to be able to just sit at home, do nothing, and do something with my time. So I picked up the Odin Project, which is a free boot camp. It's online, it's open source, and it's a very hands-off like teaching style, which worked with me. So they just give you like a project to build and just very little details, and they tell you to go and do it yourself, like figure it out. Don't ask us for help. What that helped with is it just really fit the way I like to learn, which is, you know, being my own leader. I did that for over a year, and then I did a few more courses on some more advanced stuff, and I started freelancing. About 3 years ago, I met a friend of mine in Philly at a meetup, and he had his own like Bitcoin group. We would just go have coffees. Eventually, he invited me to start working on his project, which is was a decentralized exchange, and that's kind of how I got started in crypto. I'm not sure if I should tell the story of how I started in metagame yet.
Sure. Yeah, the next question is, how did you get here? So it just flows right into that.
Yeah, I led myself there. With metagame, I think you guys started using Dework about a little over a year ago, and I did really well on Dework. That was probably one of the things that I succeeded at the most. I'm the number one contributor there. And I found one of your bounties and I did it. And that was sort of my introduction. At the beginning, I really did not understand what you guys are trying to do. The idea of just building something without, like, I didn't see the purpose of just building things for other people to build on. More so, like, I'm used to this, like, product mindset, so just you build a product, you try to sell it, you market it, you create cash flows, So it was a very different way of working and a different experience, and I kept contributing because it was stimulating, and there was a lot of challenges and difficulties that I didn't experience in other fields of this work that I do.
But you also quickly realized like our issue with the lack of this product mindset. Like we just kept on building things and like without this focus on, okay, now is the time to actually go out and sell this product. It's like to open source mindset and like sort of if you build it, they will come.
So there's these two different paths you can take in programming in general. Is you go the open source mindset and you hope for things to snowball to the point where people are paying for your product because they rely on it as a central point for whatever their business is. You see this with like Linux and Red Hat. So this is a very good example because Linux is open source software and it's a free licensing. So you can just install it, you can edit it, you can do whatever you want with it, you can make products out of it. And a company called Red Hat decided to take the Linux distribution and make it for businesses. So just to tune it in a way that would work for huge businesses, which was very successful. And they grew a lot. And eventually they took the code that they built on and they changed it to a closed source code base. Now you need to pay to use it or to turn it into a business. And so that's the success path of open source, is that you build something that is so critical for the functioning of other businesses that they will have to keep paying you to keep it going. The other path is that you are going to create a product and you're going to lock that product up. You might leave the code open source, but you would have this product connected to multiple different things that people wouldn't have access to. So in Web3, this is traditionally like front ends. So a front end, right, it's open source. Most of these projects that exist and that are popular in our space have open source front ends. But their smart contracts have built-in methods that require you to pay them a percentage of whatever you're doing on their platform. And that's how they earn their funds. The issue that I think Metagame, or the issue I noticed with Metagame, is that they're going down the first path, but there is no one building on top of it. There's no one that needs Metagame to function, and that makes it so that Metagame cannot succeed financially as an open source solution. Maybe things can spawn out of the culture in the future, and those could be products or could be open source solutions that people will need. But there's a big problem there, and I feel like the open source people are not really as business minded, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. And yeah, like especially in the case of Metagame, we're not building a single specific product, but more so this whole platform. And then in terms of the first path, the only way to really make money in such a way is that like we onboard so many people to the DAO space that later on they come back and say, you know what, Metagame really helped me get started, and now I'm gonna subscribe and or like start donating to Metagame. And that path also takes years.
It does take years, but I think the mentoring, there's a lot of benefit in mentoring, because if you give somebody a career, like you said, over time, if you point them towards success, the more they succeed, the more they feel indebted to what took them there. I still, to this day, recommend people to the Odin Project. Like every single conversation I have with somebody that they want to start learning tech, I just point them to the same project. I've contributed to the project. I've helped mentor people from there personally on my own time. And I would donate to it. I haven't thought about that yet, but I would, because I realize that like there's not really that much good mentorship out there. I think Metagame does that well. There's enough people with a lot of experience in the server that are committed to this, that somebody that is either new or average can come in and become better. And I think I've experienced that myself. I wouldn't have traditionally worked with something like Hasura. And thankfully, this bullet just sat there and taught me this for over a month. He was teaching me how to do this. And now this is a skill that I can tack on to my resume as an example, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. And you said you got into Metagame through D-Work. and then sort of what kept you is this different way of working. But yeah, what other ways would you say, what other things would you say keep you engaged in metagame, or keep you interested in metagame?
There's good people. The system is fair. I like meritocracies. If somebody is good at something, they should be pushed to the top if they want to be there. And I think that metagame provides that. It's also like I said, it's fair. The people are good. There's good mentors. And it's fun. And it's also like relaxing because I've worked for a big tech company that deals with finance. And the issue that comes there is you have a very small margin of failure. If you mess something up, you're really screwed. And I think with metagame, you don't really have that because there's no like critical infrastructure that a lot of people are using. So it's a good thing and a bad thing at the same time.
Right, you could definitely become more critical, but yeah, as long as you're not a financial product, then it's never super critical. And what would you say like drives you in general? Like, where do you get your motivation to do work in general, to be in the space?
In regards to like motivation on blockchain, Web3, crypto stuff, I think it's the idea of freedom, the lack of bureaucracy. I travel the world a lot and I live in different countries every few years. And I've dealt with a lot of issues with my banks getting shut down and not being able to access my finances. Like if I open a bank in the United States and then I leave the US for 6 months, something happens to my card, I can't mail a card over here. The banking system in the US is absolutely trash. It is genuinely horrible. In all ways, the web applications that they use are very buggy. They're very limited. You can't access them internationally, even though there's a lot of Americans outside of the U.S. In Europe, there's a lot of bureaucracy. If you're American and you have another nationality, you're still locked out of like maybe half of the services because the U.S. has a lot of regulations around double taxing. So a lot of companies don't really want to deal with that. So blockchain just kind of takes all of these issues away and it provides like good tooling. So from a use case standpoint, that's motivational. The people that work in it are very similar minded to me. That's another big thing. And then in general, what motivates me to do work is not wanting to waste my life. I think a lot of people have ideas of what they want to do and they talk about it a lot. They say, I want to do X, Y, and Z. I want to open a business or I want to go to this country. And there's some sort of block that keeps them from doing that. And everybody experiences it. I experience it too. What I don't want is to have that block take away opportunity from my life. So I make sure that if I want to do something, I try at least. And I think it's a habit that you have to build. When I started to learn how to code, I would take a big piece of paper and duct tape it on my desk and I would put like a symbol for every hour I did a thing I wanted to do. And I would basically reward myself. At that point I was smoking weed. So if I was able to get like 4 hours of coding, I would just get faded for the rest of the day. And I did stuff like that. Like I gave myself the carrot and the stick. And you know, the carrot is like, you do this thing well that you want to try, you get a reward. And the stick is if you don't do this, I'm going to be very critical towards myself. And I think that kind of keeps me going still to this day.
It makes sense. One of the things that I really like about you is that you're super like self-driven. Like you find issues on your own. You notice them. You solve them. Like you don't require any hand-holding. You just like just go at things. Like you're autonomous and you just like do shit. Don't ask too many questions and you don't wait for other people to ask you to do something. You just go ahead and do it. So were you always like that?
No, I wasn't always like that. In fact, like for maybe 2 or 3 years of my young, like maybe let's say 5 years ago, I wasn't like that. And it was really, really difficult for me to do anything by myself. I really struggled with that. I had a huge lack of motivation. I think I was kind of lost because I didn't know what I was supposed to do. I didn't finish my education. Sales is fine, but you're always like working for someone else. So someone is always telling you what to do. When you work at a sales company, like they literally have these text files that you have to read from, and you can't deviate out of that. And I think one thing that's helped me not have that mentality is the fact that I didn't finish my education, because when you go to school or you work for a lot of traditional companies, you have to sort of be like that. You need the handhold. You need to act like you need the handholding. You need people to tell you what to do. Going and doing stuff on your own is not really prioritized. And I think that is very damaging for people. So there was an advantage that I had there at the start. How did I learn to become autonomous? I think just realizing, like, the more autonomy I have as a freelancer, the more money I make and the more I'm rewarded with reputation and friends, because people value that. I value that. I tried to start a project called Hunter's Workshop, and it's still alive and it still works and it was pretty successful. But the issue I had is that I couldn't find many people who have the same autonomous trait, which is what I was looking for, is people that I could just give work to and have them just figure it out. Like, I don't want to sit and tell you how to do things. I don't know what it is. Some people are like that and some people are not. And I don't know if it's something that you can learn over time. I did, but I don't know if it's easy to replicate that. I hope that answers your question. It was a bit long-winded.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Like, as you said, it's hard to find people like that. It's a very small percentage of people who I would say who are like that. And I had the same experience with Metagame over the past 4 years. Like, it's a, I don't want to throw a number, but it's like, feels like it's 1 in 100 people who are actually like, be like autonomous like that. And I'm just trying to figure out, like, what is it that makes people like that? And is it something like, is it a skill that people can learn, or is it like a personal trait? And honestly, I'm not sure, even sure about myself, like, either, like, did I, was I always like this, or if I picked it up over the past few years?
I think it's always like nature and nurture. So there's a part of it that is in your nature. At least the desire for autonomy is in a lot of people's nature. The application of autonomy is a nurture thing. What I would credit a lot of my success to is having somebody who mentored me, which is my friend who got me into this space. Having this person kind of be very direct and harsh, and also rewarding me as well. He was a teacher at a university, he was a professor at a university, and he had a lot of experience teaching and a lot of experience on the tech side. And also, like, he was a developer and a teacher and a meetup organizer, and he does a lot of stuff, which sort of helped me have a role model for how I want to act. And because of his support, I was able to over time become more and more autonomous, to the point where I don't really need anyone's help with a lot of things anymore. But it requires a huge investment that somebody needs to make at their own expense. So if you want to turn somebody who isn't that autonomous yet into somebody who is, you need to see potential in them. You need to be able to sacrifice, and you need to do it long term. But the outcome is you have an asset. Maybe speaking about people like that isn't very appealing, but it's true, because if you guide somebody to a certain point, they will be very indebted to you and grateful to you. I think that's the process, is you find somebody that has potential and you give them what they need, and then over time wean them off of the support and have them sort of do more and more by themselves.
Yeah, I wonder. I really want to talk to more people about this, because it's a super important topic. Like, I wonder if other people would also agree that having like some kind of a mentor is what's necessary here. But yeah, like, having mentors is kind of one of the most effective learning methods as well, so that makes sense.
It's like the trades. I think humans, for the majority of their history, actually worked under mentorship and not mass education. Like, if you look at all the trades, woodwork, tattoos, mechanics, they all work under that model, right? Like, they find somebody with potential and desire, and over time they give them like bigger and bigger tasks and give them more and more control. And it's a very effective method. But when you have a classroom with, say, 30 people, it's not possible to mentor anyone. And if it is possible, then you have this preferential treatment problem where you have like a favorite student. So I think the education system that we currently like learn under really disincentivizes it. You have to kind of go out on your own and find it in the trades. And I think software development is a trade. It's like engineering. they say you're a software engineer, so you need somebody who has a lot of experience, who is able to kind of walk you through the difficult parts and give you autonomy over time. To ask you a question, though, when do you feel like your autonomy started and what drove it?
I would say when I stopped being a nihilist. I mean, I don't know. I don't remember what it was like before, but I remember while I was a nihilist, that was like a few years of my life. It was like I was just doing nothing besides go to work, which I didn't like, so I didn't do much there either. And then after work, I would just smoke weed, and then over the weekend I would drink. And then like I wasn't autonomous because there was nothing I was actually trying to achieve. So it was only after I got through this period, which is, I would say, probably mushrooms are what kicked me most out of it.
I was gonna actually say, I didn't want to mention it at the beginning because I didn't know if you're open to talking about this stuff, but I think LSD was a huge factor in my growth because I've taken a lot of different drugs, but the first time I took a drug that actually made me better was LSD, and from that day, I had like this rejuvenated will to do things, right? It just made me think, okay, we have time and we have all this space, and there's no reason to not just do something. It was a huge motivating factor. It might not be for a lot of people, but for me it was.
Yeah, I don't want to recommend it because it's like it can also get you into shit, and like I had also like bad parts of it. It was like, okay, the meaning of like in reality, like hanging by little threads, that's just like illusion of meaning, which is like your community and stuff that like make you sort of generate a meaningful life. But in general, like I think what gave me this switch from like, okay, what is the meaning of life, and like life has no meaning, to like seeing life more like a playground or a canvas, and like, okay, so there's no predetermined meaning, so I'm just gonna go out and do shit. And that's also like when I started being interested in stuff again. So like in the school, I hated school, and like I always said, bad grades. And then after this happened, I was like instantly interested in everything. Like I was like, okay, I should go study biology, I'm interested in physics, I'm interested in this and that, and like I just like all of a sudden became interested in everything.
There's the psychological model. I think the acronym is OCEAN: openness, conscientiousness, extroversion.
The big five, yeah.
Yeah, the big five. And I think with psychedelics, it's proven that they increase openness by a lot, which kind of explains what we're saying here. It makes you more open to experience and more driven. It just changes the wiring of your mind to a certain degree, at least for a small period of time, maybe permanently. I think, though, one more thing about autonomy and sort of drive and motivation is the idea. A lot of people have the binary idea in their head, like, I need to wait until everything is perfect to start, which is not how growth happens. Like, you don't become perfect and then start. You have to start and be really, really bad at something and have a lot of issues before you can be good at it. And if you're not willing to do that, you're never going to start. It's always going to be a distant dream of like, I'll do this and then I'll start. I'll get here and then I'll start. I think that's probably one of the things that I don't experience is this, you know, this drive to be perfect. Like, I'm fine doing things really bad and I'm fine taking criticism, which is very helpful if you want to start growing and becoming something.
Yeah, I think a good thing to mention here is the, you know, the ship 100 for 100. I think it's good for pretty much any skill. Like, you don't have to ship like everything being a single thing, but like, yeah, I've heard people say like this is a programming code in like when learning to build, there's a, I don't know, what was it? But like ship 100 for 100, where like for 100 days you like focus on just this skill and doing something related to this skill every day. And I've heard people use the same meme, the same method in other, like in like making music or like writing and whatever. So there's also programs, so like ship 100 for 100, but like focused on writing. So like every day you write like a small blog post or something and stuff like that. And like just making peace with the fact that it's like, okay, the first 100 are gonna be crap, and like don't delay publishing them, just fucking do it.
The mastership after 5 years, is it's true. Like, it takes 5 years to master anything, Even like, and then there's degrees of mastership. Like you could be, you know, a decent master or like an excellent world class. So if you really want to do something, I think it's important to put 100 days in to just see that, is this possible? Do I really have the drive for this? Or is it just something I think is cool? Because there's also that difference, right? Like you might look at something and think, this is beautiful, I really want to do this, but realize you're more of an observer than a, you know, participator, and that's fine. It's fine to be an observer. It's fine to appreciate the arts and whatever it is that you like, but you have to go through that period of, is this what I really want to do? And that takes 100 days. So in programming, it's just like 100 days of code, and it's a hashtag on Twitter. It works for everything. I agree. It works for the gym. It works for meditation. It works for everything.
All right. And do you have any specific goals also that drive you? Like anything that's like at the back of your head that like pushes you forward? Something specific you want to achieve over the next few years or in your lifetime?
Yeah, I have like the short-term goals, the long-term goals, the personal, the work. I have like a notebook and I keep all of this stuff in place that let's try to inch towards that. I think my main goal is to just be good at what I do and help others try to do the same, which is like, I want to mentor people. I like the idea of it. I like the practice of it. It's just hard to find people. A lot of people have potential. It's just hard to find someone that has potential and is also compatible with your way of thinking and doing things. So that's one thing I want to accomplish, is try to mentor somebody, at least one person, and have them eventually become a mentor. So pass it on. I want to raise a good kid. I have a kid now, and I want my kid to be successful. I want to move to a place like Alaska maybe and try to learn how to live off the land. That's probably like 10, 20 years from now. And from the technical side, I want to build a communication tool that helps people, that is uncensorable and easy to use. It doesn't have to be fancy. It just has to be something that you can use in any situation. Even if you're like under rubble in a war zone, you should be able to take out a device and send a text message. That would be like a technical dream of mine. How you would accomplish that, it's a very difficult problem because of the fact that you have to rely on, you know, other people. There's a lot of dependencies for something like that to work. And then on the metagame side is I want to turn metagame into a self-sustaining product and project in general. Like I said, I like the culture there, and I think that it needs to be something that can keep surviving long term. It would leave a big hole behind if metagame were to go down, because a lot of experience I've had, and I've not seen anything like it. I think it's a great project. It just needs the right, you know, push.
All right, many many different threads to pull on from here. But I want to mention the project that you mentioned the other day, like about sending messages, like connecting to internet by intercepting the radio waves. That's a pretty cool project.
It is a very cool project. So I have a friend of mine who's building a peer-to-peer web application framework. So for the people that know React, React is a framework for building websites. So my friend is building a framework for building peer-to-peer applications. It basically comprises of a node. This node is like software that you run on your machine. It has your identity on it. You just give it like environment variables, you give it names, and you connect it to other nodes in the network. And the real ingenuity that is behind what he's building is the fact that two nodes can find each other anywhere through any like protocol. It could be HTTP, it could be UDP, it could be Bluetooth. So as long as there is a way to physically route a connection from one node to another, no matter where they are in the world, it's possible. And then there's another innovation happening outside of his project, but these two can be merged together, is these devices that basically hijack radio waves or internet in anywhere in 10 kilometers. As long as there is a connection within 10 kilometers of where you're standing, it could hijack that and then you could run the node on that physical device that hijacks the connection and send messages through that to whatever node you're connected to. The difficulty, I mean, the limitation is that you can only really send very, very small amounts of text through this because of the way it works, but it's still something. Like, if you're, like I said, if you're dying on a battlefield, you can say ILY to your kid, example, or if you are in a situation where, you know, you're in a hostage situation, you can click three buttons and you can call a police station. These are small examples of applications for emergency messaging technology that doesn't rely on ISPs to that degree, like internet service providers. And you can also connect it to Neuralink, which hopefully that'll keep growing. It's a very good service. So I am not that involved in it. It's my friend who's like leading this and doing this, but I am very, like, I know what his stuff does. I have it on my machine and I'm in constant conversation with him. And I hope that in the future, when this thing matures a little bit more, it could be possible to start doing that, which I think could be in another year or two.
That's super cool. All right. And then the semi-final question, which is like, what do you hope to gain from metagame? Like, how are you benefiting from metagame? And how do you hope to benefit in the future?
How am I? I'm benefiting with people around me that can help me grow. I'm benefiting from friends, which I think a lot of people in metagame I can consider friends because we know about each other. We started doing things together. We worked on things with each other. I'm also benefiting financially because I am working on it pretty much full time for the foreseeable future, at least. And I'm also gaining reputation. And I think that despite the fact that metagame is always like iffy in terms of how successful it is financially, there's still a lot of reputation to be had in it. Like, people know it. Big DAOs, big groups know metagame. They know, you know, the whole meta ecosystem. It's not just like metagame. There's other projects in the same ecosystem. So these are the things that I personally benefit from. And I also benefit from a group of people that I agree with on a lot of things. I hope that somebody can come into metagame with the right mindset that I'm looking for so that I can mentor them. But I'm not that great at anything yet. Although if it's somebody who's a beginner, I could probably help them get to a certain point. That's what I would hope to achieve in the future. Besides, you know, helping this become a sustainable product.
Awesome. And yeah, you pretty much already answered this as one of your goals. But the last question is, what's your hope for metagame, if you have anything else to add besides the financial sustainability, which you already mentioned?
My hope for metagame is that it becomes an education platform that can guide people. I think it would be good to semi-automate the mentorship system. And this is something I've not really thought about in depth at all, but it just comes to mind through this conversation. There are very competent developers in metagame. They might not be as active, but they are there and they're open to helping people. And there are these like pipelines that have been built with quests and playbooks that could semi-guide people towards a career. It's not good enough yet, to be honest, because it doesn't, like, there's no coherency. Somebody can start on the playbooks page and sort of click things and do things and start the journey and then get lost because the system is not as well developed. But I think that metagame is a prime leader in terms of having all of the pieces to create an educational pipeline that takes somebody from very limited skills to somebody who is working in the ecosystem. I would hope, and I think also metagame has the potential to become a place where you can mentor these people that are coming in and then hook them up with jobs. It doesn't have to be at metagame itself. I don't think that people should be coming and working at metagame as much as they should be guided towards a job somewhere else based on their, you know, skill set, their experience level. We could be a matchmaking service for people and opportunities. And these are like three things that I think, you know, the matchmaking system, the educational system, and the financial stability.
Yeah. I agree. And yeah, I love the mentoring ideas. Like, I'm very much focused on the academy, but I think that's like a great outcome of that. Like, we can use the academy to sort of filter the people who are really interested and people who are really driven to do things, And then once you complete some of the playbooks, then you kind of qualify yourself for the mentorship program or something like that.
Yeah, there isn't really any paths for mentorship that are available. Like, I don't know of any DAO that does this.
There's one for building specifically, like it's called Ethernaut. They do mentorship for getting people to transition from being Web2 developers to Web3 developers. But that's for building specifically. Yeah, yeah.
It's very specific. It also requires people to have a certain experience level. There's this like Node Guardians, which also sort of does this as well. Node Guardians does this, but it's also very, very specific. I think that metagame could be more general because we have all the different guilds that people could be. You know the idea, the Harry Potter idea of the Sorting Hat is you sit them down, you give them a hat, and then you figure out what path they should be going down. The problem is that I think it's just how do you incentivize people? And like the technical side, you could have a really good product, but still not have a way to incentivize people to do it because there's nothing we could promise them. We could promise them to get better at things, but we can't promise them that, hey, if you spend like 500 hours doing this stuff, you will have a job ready for you if you can pass X or Y. I think that is what we're missing.
Yeah, I agree. Like clear path to like, okay, this is, well, it's still not a guarantee, but like these opportunities are here. And if you get good enough, you will almost certainly find a proper paid role.
Yeah, that would kind of make metagame in general successful. It would also give people a reason to buy into it, like find, like if they, you know, if we're talking about how do we become sustainable as an open source project without really a product, is if we could, you know, give people a path. I think there was this application, like it's just a regular Web2 application. So you download it, you want to learn a language, let's say French. You download this app, and then when you start your journey, you deposit $100, let's say. So if you fail, let's start with if you fail. If you fail and you just abandon it, you lose the 100 and it just stays in a pot. And if you complete it, all of the remaining people, which is probably like maybe 10, 20% of everybody that downloaded this and started, they split the pot. So the people that succeed are splitting the pot of all of the amount that was deposited for the learning journey. And these are some examples of like incentive structures that could be employed to both support metagame in being, you know, consistent and sustainable, and also give people a reason to try to learn, is that even if you don't get a job, you will at least get a certain amount of money from it, and your time wasn't completely wasted.
Yeah, before you were talking, I actually took a note on cohorts, which reminded me of the ideas from a few months ago, that like people who start playbooks or people who just join metagame could be joined together into cohorts. And then this can use something like Mochi or something like the Rite of Moloch, so people can stake on their goals. And then, like you say, like this keeps them incentivized to complete the goal. And also the people who then fail their goal, other people can actually earn from that. So I think that would be a really cool mechanism.
You know, if we talk about like goals for metagame, I think partnerships is probably the one thing that we, like, it's all there. We just need to do it. It's one of the biggest wastes, I think, is that we have such a deep community, but we're not really leveraging that. You just mentioned Raid of Moloch and Mochi. We also know Raid Guild. Like, these are all places that fit exactly what our structure is, and we're kind of getting lost trying to, you know, focus on one thing when there's a lot of obvious answers in front of us. If we partner with Mochi and we say, hey, let's do this program together. We start similar to what we're doing now. I wanted to talk a bit about the podcast. I completely got distracted, but I also have a podcast, and I'm here mostly because I want to be here. I want to do this. I want to be a guest, and I also want to push the podcast. But if, let's say, Mochi and Metagame get together and we say, all right, let's do this co-program. We'll do some marketing for it. We're co-marketing. It's a collaboration between us. We set up one playbook, and if you complete the playbook, you have to do it through Mochi. And now we cross all of these different people from one side to another. Like, we're sharing our audiences. And that's a huge wasted potential that we have, that nothing's happening on that side.
Yeah, that's very true. So many possibilities. It's just the projects that are already in the network, the projects that are already here. And then the value proposition, like with the finding roles, I think goes back also to what you said previously, like that metagaming is creating this culture, and like there really is no other place in Web3 that teaches people about the cultural side. So it's not just about the technical side, but also like the philosophy of Web3 and DAOs and all of that. And then like when we like offering projects that we can help them hire new people, these new people also like actually understand like the philosophical, the cultural background of Web3 and DAOs, rather than just like knowing how to complete the specific tasks.
It would be very helpful, because if you look at, I think one more example that is very good is Dework. So Dework has a very successful product, but they abandoned it. So it's like an abandoned project at this point, I believe, because there's no development happening on it. They got a huge seed round and they did the work for a year or two and they just kind of dropped it, and everyone's looking at, like, they're all focusing on their own projects now, the team behind it.
You had no idea.
Yeah, it's really sad. If you look at Dework right now and you go to the bounties tab, you'll see it's just empty. Like, the last one was maybe a few weeks ago and it was a test run. Like, it's not even a real bounty. And there's so many people on that platform. If you post a bounty right now for $10, within an hour, there's going to be 10 people in the metagame server just jumping around, like, asking what they can do and how they can do it. There's a lot of people that are incentivized by small amounts of money, but they are not necessarily Web3 cultured people. Like, they're just here because they know this is an easy way to make money, right? Like, it's a small market. There's not much competition. If you look at, for example, Upwork, it's much more difficult to find work than Dework because there's very little competition. But the problem is when they join these Discord servers, they're kind of like dead weight because they're not necessarily tied to the culture. They don't understand the goals and the motivations, and there's no filter for the quality of the contributor. They did everything right on the product side, but they're completely gone on the cultural side. It's a great case study of what they have that we don't have and what we have that they don't have. There's a lot of examples like this, but Dework is really a striking one.
And any idea why they abandoned it? Like, that they built a great product?
Well, they got paid for it and they lost interest.
Oh, I think they didn't manage to raise more money, or just like spend the money?
No, they raised, I think it was a $5 million seed round for less than 2 years of work. I don't want to say this out of turn. If anybody from Dework happens to listen to this and I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but I think that the Dework website was actually forked from another open source project, and the only real custom stuff that they did is the interactions with the Web3 wallets. But the platform itself is a fork. So they barely spent time developing it, and they are not really growing it at all. It's been stagnant for a year. And all of the founders, they're very technically adept people, and they're well known in the space, but one of them is working in AI now. The other ones are just kind of, you know, enjoying their success, basically. So they don't have a drive to keep going. And I think, you know, like when you have a struggling project, they're much more motivated to keep going than a project that's very successful.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was praising them a lot because I thought they built the whole thing in like 4 weeks. And that's kind of what they told us when they were demoing it, that they like build the whole product in like a few weeks. And I was like, damn, like that's super impressive. So I hope that they didn't actually...
They built the product in 4 weeks, but they forked it.
Okay.
So that's why it was done in 4 weeks. It is still impressive because they... You know how big they got, like...
They captured the pretty much like whole the DAO marketplace, like in terms of the bounties, like this, like... It's the platform for bounties in the DAO space.
Yes, and they have the same audience as us. They really do. Like, we are sort of looking at the same people. We want people who are interested in contributing to the space. They want to find opportunities. They're driven enough to look, and they just need the proper guidance. And I think Dework does that on a technical level, on a product level. We do that on a cultural level. And unfortunately, it is going to be It is possible for us to sort of build something similar to D-Work, but it's another like whole journey that we have to take and convince people of. And people are going to say, why not just do D-Work? D-Work is going to work for a very long time. The platform functions. It's just not going to grow anymore unless there's a change of heart in the you know, people behind it, which I don't think there will be.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, if anybody's listening, it sounds like it's a good opportunity for the Dungeon Master by Radial. Like, they build this whole tool and they're just using it internally. I think they could turn it into a great product for the DAO space.
It's very, very, like, it's very specialized towards what Raid Guild does, though. And I don't think it could be externalized because it's just, you need to understand raids and you need to have a lot of developers. I think the difference is between one and many. Like, D-Work is like a one-person, you know, adventure. Raid Guild is like, you know, a group of people need to tackle something. I don't really think there's many single-person raids.
Got it. Yeah, that's true. All right. Yeah, is there anything else that you wanted to mention?
I did want to say about the podcast. It's just a shout out. If anybody here is interested in a podcast where I speak to different leaders in the space, I will get Keith to put it in the description. And if anybody would like to be a guest on my podcast, please come over. If anybody's listening to this and wants to learn how to code, just message me in the metagame server and I can help you. And that's pretty much it. That covers everything.
And is there any specific topics or like something that you're covering, focusing on with the podcast?
Honestly, the only real criteria is whether or not I'm interested in talking to the person I'm interviewing. Like, if I'm interested in them, I just do the podcast. Mostly, it's like, you know, what their journey is, what their product or project is, and personal questions about, you know, who they are, what they do, and what they're interested in. And sometimes I talk about politics, but not necessarily American politics, so that's pretty much it. But mostly about people who have projects or want to start projects or have an interesting journey. That's what I like to cover.
Got it. Sounds good. Yeah, I thought this was going to be a half an hour episode, but we're already almost at an hour and it's been super interesting. So,
well, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. This was a great conversation.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to speaking again soon.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah, thank you again and have a great rest of the day. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.